This is Telling Tales with Ms. G here at KTO 104.3 in Juneau. And I hope you're ready for a story. It's a good one. It's a little long, but I think you'll enjoy it. It's called The Spider in the Bath, and it's by Joan Aiken. Excuse me. So, I'll give you a second, and then I'll be right back. Really, just a second. Here at Telling Tales with Ms. G, 104.3 in Juneau, Alaska. This is Telling Tales with Ms. G here at KTO 104.3. Tonight's story is by Joan Aiken, and it's called The Spider in the Bath. Once there was a princess called Emma. Her father, the king, was a fussy, selfish man, always finding fault with the weather. If there were several hot days together, he would grumble, "When in the world is it going to rain?" If the wind blew, he said, "I can't stand this tiresome wind." And if it rained, he said, "Why doesn't the sun ever shine?" He was so busy complaining about the weather that he had no time to spare for his daughter, who led a rather glum life. Her mother, the queen, had died when Emma was only 2, and she had nobody to play with. The king would not permit her to play with the palace pages or the prime minister's daughter, Ludo or dominoes or snakes and ladders. With the under-nursemaid were the only games allowed her. So Emma was often lonely and bored, and as lonely, bored people often do, she had become rather selfish and nasty. The king's great-grandmother had been a witch, and Emma had a little seed of witchcraft in her. Not much, but as she grew lonelier and nastier, the seed of witchcraft grew bigger. When she was 6, she discovered an interesting thing about herself. She found that if she kept her whole mind very still and thought very hard indeed, she could move small objects from one place to another without touching them. For instance, she could move a pea or a potato chip from one side of her plate to the other, just by watching it and thinking about it and willing it to move. She found this out by accident one day when the palace doctor had come to see her because she had a cold. He took her temperature and shook an aspirin out of a bottle and was just about to pop it into Emma's mouth when the aspirin rolled out of his hand, fell on the floor, and bounced out of sight under Emma's bed. "Confound it," said the doctor. "Where's that pill got to?" He shook out another aspirin, and that did the same thing. Emma's face was perfectly straight, but inside she was laughing her head off. After he had lost 4 aspirins, the doctor, very annoyed, gave the bottle to the under-nursemaid, Hattie, and told her to see that the princess had won before she went to sleep. He had better things to do with his time. Of course, Emma never took an aspirin. She detested medicine, and she could always get her own way with Hattie, who was very shy in her new job, only 7 or 8 years older than the princess herself and a little frightened of Emma. With good reason, for soon Hattie discovered that when Emma's cold blue eyes were on her, pins were likely to drop out of her fingers or prick her sharply. Buttons that she was supposed to be sewing on shirts would roll away and lose themselves. Plates would slip from her grasp, or the hairpins would drop altogether out of her shining hair, and Miss Targe, the head nurse, coming in and seeing Hattie's hair fall over her face, would scold her for untidiness. Hattie soon began to suspect that the Princess Emma was the cause of these troubles, but how could she be sure? And anyway, there was nothing in the world she could do about it. When Hattie played snakes and ladders with the princess, the dice would be sure to roll over and over, giving the princess nothing but sixes, while Hattie had a steady run of ones and twos. Also, Emma's counters seemed to skip ahead round the board by themselves, even when Emma's hands were nowhere near the table. When they played games, Hattie always lost. After a while, Emma found that she was able to move large things, oranges and apples and shoes and plates and hairbrushes. It was hard work doing this. She had to squeeze her mind together like a clenched fist inside her head while sitting completely still, watching the thing she was trying to move. She had to hold her breath and almost stop her heart from beating. The first time she managed to roll an orange from one end of the breakfast table to the other. She felt so tired that she had to go and lie down on her bed for half an hour. But soon she grew better at her strange game. One day she even managed to move an apple right through the wall from the nursery into her bedroom next door. Moreover, the apple went clean through the plaster without even leaving a hole. How about that? Emma was so proud of what she had done that she wanted to dance round the room and shout. But there was nobody whom she could tell. The king, her father, would have said, "Quiet, please, Emma. Princesses should be seen and not heard," and then gone on grumbling about the weather. Hattie would have been scared to death and worried as well. The palace pages would snigger disbelievingly. And the head nurse, Miss Targe, would say, "That's quite enough of that, Your Highness. We don't want such goings-on in our nurseries. Now go and wash your hands." So Emma went on practicing by herself, in secret. She moved a tooth out of her father's head just before he bit into a piece of toast. She moved Hattie's fur bonnet onto the fire one snowy afternoon, so the poor girl had to take Emma for a walk without it, and caught a nasty cold. Emma moved a rosebush into the middle of the palace lawn, greatly annoying the head gardener, who wondered for the rest of his life how it had happened. She moved a shoe from the hoof of one of the horses pulling the royal carriage, and a rolling pin from the cook's hand into the oven. Sometimes Emma's tricks went wrong. You know how if somebody knocks your elbow when you are pouring milk into a cup, the milk splashes all over the table? If some sudden sight or sound startled Emma when she was concentrating on moving an object, the result was rather queer. The first time it happened was at lunch, when the footman set a dish of strawberries in front of the king. Emma fixed her mind on the dish, intending to move it just out of her father's reach. But a speck of dust on her nose made her sneeze, and instead of sliding away, the plate of berries shook and quivered and splintered and split up, so that suddenly, instead of just one dish, there were 100 identical blue bowls, each full of red strawberries, lined up before the king in 10 rows of 10. He was furious, of course. "Is this supposed to be some sort of joke?" he roared, and dismissed the cook, the butler, and all the footmen. Emma wasn't in the least sorry for the people who had been sacked, just interested in what had gone wrong with her magic. The same thing happened on a day when she was trying to move a narrow gold ring off Hattie's little finger. The ring had been left to Hattie by her mother when she died, and this annoyed Emma, whose own mother had left her nothing but a crown, which she would not be allowed to wear until she grew up. But the ring, a child's ring, very tiny, was tight on Hattie's finger, and in struggling to shift it, Emma's mind must have lost its grip for a second. The result was 100 little gold rings glittering and clinking in the bathroom basin, which Hattie was doing her best to polish. "My goodness gracious, Your Highness," Hattie exclaimed, "wherever in the world did all these rings come from?" "Never mind where they came from. You'd better have them," said Emma crossly. "They are yours in a way." "No, indeed, they are not, Your Highness." And Hattie carried them to Miss Targe, who scolded her and whisked up the rings in her apron, saying they must have been left behind by a burglar. She took them to the palace security officer, who sold them and kept the money. Still, apart from a few accidents like these, Emma, by regular practice, became more and more skillful at moving objects. By the time she reached her teens, she was growing ambitious and wanted to move live creatures. Think of moving a tiger out of the royal zoo, or her father off his throne, out into the middle of the palace lily pond. Emma found that moving live things was much harder work. She had to practice on very small creatures first, fruit flies and the ants that ran over the palace terrace. Even houseflies were too large and fidgety. Bees, wasps, and bumblebees were too big, and their buzzing gave Emma pins and needles in her mind. She still hadn't gone beyond ants when one night, as she was getting ready for bed, she found a spider in her marble bath. Emma detested spiders, and this was a particularly big one, black and furry and bunchy and long-legged. He kept very still indeed, but when he did move, when Emma's shadow fell across the bath, it was with such a sudden scurrying scuttle that Emma would not have dared touch him for anything in the world. She tried to move him with her mind, but he was much too big for that. "Hattie?" Emma called loudly. "Miss Torch, Hattie, come here quickly." But Hattie was out, for it was her evening off, and Miss Torch was downstairs having her supper. Emma had to go to bed without taking a bath. Next morning, the spider was still there. He seemed to have grown a bit bigger. "Hattie, take that spider out of the bath," said the princess, when the under-nursemaid came in to lay out Emma's clean clothes for the day. Hattie trembled a little. She was afraid of spiders, too, but she carefully and gently wrapped the spider in a cloth of silver face towel and shook him out of the window onto the wisteria vine that grew outside. "Now give the bath a good scrub before I get into it," said Emma. At breakfast that day, among the mail, there was a letter from the Crown Prince of Pleo, Finland, asking for the Princess Emma's hand in marriage. The king snorted irritably over it. "Who does he think he is? A miserable little two-penny, half-penny kingdom like Pleo, Finland? The prince who marries my daughter must bring 100 gentlemen at arms, each one carrying a 1 kilo bag of diamonds. They certainly can't manage that in Pleo, Finland." And he dictated a letter of refusal to his secretary. Emma was delighted to think that her father valued her so highly. She spent the day trying to move a wasp out of a jam jar and finally managed to shift it into a pot of face cream. A month or so later, the spider was there in the bath again, and he seemed to have grown. To Emma's horrified eyes, he appeared about as big as a plum. She tried again to shift him with her mind, but she couldn't. Hattie was downstairs doing a bit of ironing, and Miss Targe was having her supper. So again, Emma went to bed without her bath. In the morning, she ordered Hattie to kill the spider. "Oh, no, Your Highness, I couldn't." "Go on, don't be such a coward," said Emma crossly. "It's bad luck to kill spiders, Your Highness." In the end, Hattie, trembling like a leaf, wrapped the spider in a golden towel and carefully put him out of the window among the wisteria leaves. "Throw him down on the terrace," ordered the princess. "Otherwise, he'll only find his way in again." But Hattie was too kind-hearted to do that, and Emma was secretly angry because Hattie had been brave enough to do something she couldn't do herself. A few months later, when Emma went to bed, the spider was back in the bath again, and now he was as big as a furry tennis ball with legs. "Get out, you horrible thing," said Emma, and she turned on the cold tap. The spider scurried to and fro in the bath as the water rose. His frantic movements frightened Emma, who thought he might jump right out of the bath. She turned the water off, switched off the light, shut and locked the bathroom door, and without washing or brushing her teeth, jumped into bed, knocking over a glass of water on the bedside table. She hid her head under the covers, furious with the spider for having frightened her so. "In the morning, I'm going to move him," she decided angrily. For that same day, at her practice, she had managed to move a canary chick and a small dormouse provided by the palace gardener. "If I can move a mouse, I can move a spider," thought Emma. "I'll show him who's master." So next morning, when it was light and she felt braver, Emma put on her ermine dressing gown and went into the bathroom filled with determination. There sat the spider, and he had grown in the night. Now he was as big and hairy as a coconut. Emma heard Hattie come into her bedroom with an armful of clean clothes. "Now," she thought, "I must do it quickly." And she focused her mind on the spider like a gardener turning on a jet of hose water. But just at that moment,
Hattie cut her finger on a piece of broken glass that Emma had knocked over and left where it lay. Hattie let out a sharp cry of pain, and Emma's mind was jolted off its track. The spider in the bath jerked, quivered, shivered, fell apart, and all of a sudden, instead of just one, there were 100 huge black furry spiders filling the bath to the brim, jostling and rustling and staring hard at Emma with those beady black eyes. Emma let out a screech which brought Hattie running with a handkerchief bundled around her bleeding finger. Hattie herself was so horrified by the sight of what was in the bath that she could only gasp. "Oh, Your Highness." "That was your fault," said Emma savagely. "So now you can get rid of them. Go on, that's an order." She was furious that she had failed to move the spider. Hattie, white as cotton wool, stepped towards the towel rail, but Emma shouted, "No, you are to take those spiders out of the bath with your hands. I don't want those spiders touching my towel. Go on, take them in your hands and drop them out of the window." "Oh, Your Highness, you wouldn't make me do that." "Wouldn't I just," said Emma. "Do it or you're fired, and I'll see that you get into jail for disobeying my orders." So Hattie, her teeth chattering with terror, crept to the bath and plunged her hands to the wrists into the heavy, furry mass of spiders. Her finger was still dripping blood. "Well, one good thing," thought Hattie. "They do say a cobweb's the best plaster to put on a cut." So that cheered her up a little. She picked up a double handful of spiders, all tangled together, and then with her eyes shut, ran across to the window and dropped them out. Down they slid, on thick silvery webs, and left her hands all coated in web, too, like gray silk gloves. "Hurry up," said Emma. "Don't stop. Get rid of them all." To and fro, Hattie went, with armful after armful of spiders. By the time she had carried half a dozen loads of the black furry creatures, she found she didn't mind them quite so much. And presently, she began to feel quite friendly towards them. After all, they were soft as thistle down, and they didn't bite or sting or even struggle, but just quietly let her carry them. Hattie, for her part, took tremendous care not to bruise them or bend their legs or bump them against each other, and she let each one glide gently down its own web onto the terrace below. There were exactly 100. As she let out the last one, "Oh, my goodness gracious," cried Hattie. "Oh, my word, Your Highness, do come and look." But Emma had flounced into the bathroom and was crossly brushing her teeth and didn't hear Hattie's cry of wonder. Down below on the terrace, instead of 100 spiders, there were 100 handsome young men, all bowing and smiling. One of them had a crown on his head and a knapsack on his back. The rest carried plastic bags of diamonds. They all gazed up admiringly at Hattie's pink cheeks, blue print dress, and shining golden hair. The one who wore the crown bowed particularly low and gave Hattie a specially warm smile. Even pinker than usual, she smiled shyly back. "Who in the world are you all?" she asked. "I'm Prince Boris of Voltovdia," replied the crowned one. "I was on my way here last year to ask for the prince's hand in marriage, when my horse had the ill luck to tread on a snake who was a witch in disguise, and she turned me into a spider. She told me I could only be changed back by somebody who was brave enough to pick me up with their bare hands and kind enough to give me a little of their blood." Hattie looked down at her bare hands, from which the silvery webs were peeling, and noticed with surprise that her cut finger was completely healed, although it had been quite a bad cut. "So," went on Prince Boris, "I am forever grateful to you, dear and beautiful girl, for rescuing me. And I should like to ask for your hand in marriage." "Oh," said Hattie, blushing even more, "but I'm not the princess. I am only her maid." "That," said the prince, "makes no difference at all. You are the lady for me. Will you ride back with me and be queen of Voltovdia?" "Yes, thank you," said Hattie, for she had fallen in love with him at first sight, as he had with her. So she pushed up the sash a bit farther, stepped out of the window, and slid down the silvery rope of spider's webs, which was easily thick enough to support her. "Who are all these other young gentlemen?" she asked, looking round at the handsome young men with their bags of diamonds. I have no idea, answered Prince Boris. For some reason, they all came and joined me in the bath. We wish to be your followers, chorused the young men. Certainly you may, if that is your wish, said the prince. But you might as well leave all these diamonds here. We have enough diamonds in the mines of Voltaldia to keep the whole world supplied. I brought a bag to offer the princess, but what a disagreeable girl she is. I'm certainly glad that I was saved from marrying her. Boris and Hattie and all the followers jumped gaily off the palace terrace and hurried away to buy 101 horses to carry them back to Voltaldia, where they lived happily ever after. All that Princess Emma saw when she had brushed her teeth and shouted angrily several times for Hattie to come and clean the bath was a wide-open window. When she looked out, she noticed down below a great many bags of diamonds. No other prince ever came to ask for Emma's hand. Perhaps word had got around how disagreeable she was. She spent the rest of her life moving objects with her mind, larger and larger ones, until at last she was able to move whole cathedrals and power stations and icebergs and moderate-sized mountains. At first, she found it quite an interesting hobby, but in the end, she became bored with it and used to sit for days and days at a time on her throne, for by then, the king had died and she had become queen, doing nothing at all, whatever. I hope you enjoyed that story. That was The Spider in the Bath by Joan Aiken. This is Telling Tales with Ms. G. I'm going to leave you with some music for tonight. And thank you. Until next time, good night. Thank you.